Welcome to episode 35 of Camthropod, the Cambridge Anthropology podcast. This is Origin Stories, Part 1, by Adam Hindon.
Anthropology is a field that for a long time has hinged on ethnographic fieldwork, which involves immersion on some level into a specific field site or sites. Traditionally, anthropologists studied in sites that were geographically and presumably culturally distant from their own home places. This model traces its roots to Bronislaw Malinowski's seminal formulation of in-situ participant observation, which he conducted in the Trobriand Islands. But what factors brought the Polish anthropologist to Western Melanesia in the first place? How do anthropologists anywhere become intertwined with the communities they study? And how do the unique, serendipitous, and sometimes asymmetrical processes of fieldsite selection affect their interlocutors and their research? My name is Adam Hindon, and I'm a recent graduate from the Social Anthropological Research MPhil program at the University of Cambridge. While there, I noticed that little attention was paid to questions of field site selection during our dissertation discussions, as students were expected to already have directed their research interests towards certain topics and locations. Moreover, we were all being taught by anthropologists who had spent significant amounts of time in field sites all over the world, used these experiences to inform their pedagogy, but similarly did not touch on how they originally came to such sites. This seemingly undiscussed stage in the ethnographic process inspired me to explore just how diverse field site selection can be, leading to the birth of origin stories. This three-part podcast includes the stories of how 9 anthropologists, all now at Cambridge, conducted fieldwork in 9 different places around the world. Each story is unique, and reveals how each anthropologist differently navigated tensions between their individual research interests and the logistical realities of access, funding, and advising. Welcome to episode 1 of Origin Stories.
First, I spoke to Professor Shawn Lazar about how she came to do fieldwork in El Alto, Bolivia, and Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Okay, so how I ended up in El Alto is... It's a slightly long story in that it goes back, I would trace it back to my undergraduate time when I did history. And I did this course on the conquest of the Americas, of South America. And I just remember reading this book that had this introduction that kind of took you down the Andes from the north all the way down to the south. And that combined with the fact that I had been reading Gabriel Garcia Marquez and, you know, had this kind of romantic notion of Latin America, which I now sometimes think might have been affected a bit by seeing Romancing the Stone, you know, that film with Michael Douglas, kind of ages ago. So this kind of incredibly romantic notion of South America combined with this amazing depiction of the Andes in this book made me want to go to the Andes. And so then I knew I wanted to do a master's in Latin American studies. And so initially I was looking at Lima, which is obviously crazy if you want to go to the Andes because Lima is a coastal city. But I'd just gone Peru and to go there. But as luck would have it, my old Spanish teacher from home, who wasn't a school teacher, was just a private tutor, had friends in La Paz in Bolivia. So I ended up going and staying with somebody that they knew and teaching English in La Paz before doing my master's, and just completely fell in love with the place. And then I did my master's, and I did my master's dissertation on a political movement that sort of straddled La Paz and El Alto. And that movement was called CONDEPA. And it was just so kind of cool and brilliant and interesting that I just knew that El Alto would be the place. So I didn't do my master's dissertation so much on El Alto, but I did go up to El Alto from La Paz just realized that it would be a really great place to research. Okay, and so then in terms of actually ending up where I ended up in El Alto for the PhD research, that was down to connections that my PhD supervisor had. And I went through a kind of Catholic youth group that had some connections with an NGO, and ended up really luckily in Rosas Pampa, which is the district of El Alto, and I happened to rent a room from, basically it was a lass who she was very active in the Catholic youth group, and they had a room available that I could rent. Her mum turned out to be just this amazing woman who, I mean, they kind of, they really looked after me. She was just brilliant. She'd sort of tell me loads of stuff. She was both, I mean, she worked in the, as sort of head of the Parent Teachers Association in the school, but she was also a kind of part-time ritual specialist. And she just kind of did bits and pieces. She's this kind of key figure in the community. So I got really, really lucky, kind of spending time with her, and that's how I ended up in El Alto. Okay, and if you want to know about Buenos Aires, that was actually a much more kind of pragmatic decision in a way, because I was wanting to start a new bit of research after I finished my PhD and postdoctoral work, which resulted in the El Alto book. I then wanted to do some research, kind of taking that further. And I kind of lit on the idea of working with Bolivians in other places. Now, I knew somebody, actually the son of this lady that I was telling you about in El Alto, who's wonderful. He'd gone to Sao Paulo. The age of 14, he'd gone to Sao Paulo to work in kind of garment stitching. So I had been thinking, well, maybe it would be Sao Paulo or maybe Buenos Aires, because I knew there's a big community of Bolivians in Buenos Aires. And really that kind of came down to in part language, in that I can speak Spanish. I can read Portuguese, but I find it really difficult to hear and to speak it. I also made a very pragmatic decision that I didn't want to go back to Bolivia, because by that time I had young children who, when I went to Buenos Aires, they were 1 and 3. And El Alto is 4,000 meters above sea level. It's also quite a poor area. So that can have kind of effects on your health. And with very little kids, I didn't think that they would be able to tell me if they were feeling really ill or had altitude sickness or that sort of thing. But what I didn't want to do was kind of live in the wealthy part of La Paz and commute up to El Alto, because I felt that would be sort of unethical and wrong, and I didn't want to do that. So I thought, well, actually, let's just switch. And in a combined way, because my partner needed to come with me, we thought he had a better kind of career trajectory, better possibility for having a career, a kind of continuing his career in Buenos Aires rather than in Bolivia. So it's this super pragmatic kind of decision about how to do research when you've got these kind of young kids, which is quite a very different matter from, you know, for your PhD, you can sort of follow your heart. but I really, really like Buenos Aires. When I did my PhD, we traveled to Buenos Aires, you know, it's just kind of part of sort of traveling around. And I thought it was a fantastic city. And I still do. So, that's basically the story.
Next, I talked to Dr. Tom White, who studied on the other side of the world in Inner Mongolia.
So I think I came to Inner Mongolia, like a lot of anthropologists, perhaps a bit through, well, this part of the world, a bit through, accident's not the right word, but my interests, I think, come from a kind of China studies perspective. And I had spent a year, 2 years in China teaching in Beijing. And during that time, I'd become very interested in the border regions of China, particularly the Uyghur in Xinjiang. And I had a good Uyghur friend in Beijing, and I was learning Uyghur with him. And I was interested in this question of how China transitioned from a kind of imperial political formation to a nation. Mm-hmm. And so the position of ethnic minorities to me seemed really central to the question of what China was, and this modern history of attempting to make a nation out, a nation state out of this empire. And so I think I then somehow exactly how I got to this I'm not sure, but somehow I realized that my interests were anthropological. Mm-hmm. I think for a while I had thought something like international relations was what I wanted to do, so I looked into that, and somehow it became evident that that wasn't the right way of asking the kinds of questions that I was interested in. So I then found out about this thing called anthropology. I mean, I had no background in it. I had no knowledge of it. I'd done English literature at university. I had no social science background. So this is me sort of grasping for some form of orientation, I think. And eventually it became clear that social anthropology was the kind of thing that I would like to be doing. I think ethnography somehow made a lot of sense to me as a method. And through doing more research, it became clear that Cambridge had this Mongolia and Inner Asia Studies unit. I realized that if I wanted to study China kind of from its borders, from the perspective of its borderlands, this was probably the best place to do it. So I came here. I had this vague desire to study Uyghur traders and the role of kind of religion in facilitating trade networks. And I got here and I did my master's, and I came to be applying for my PhD. Exactly how I transitioned away is still a bit obscure to me, but I think it became clear for practical reasons that this would be very difficult to do. And this was in consultation with my supervisor, Professor Carrie Humphrey. And I'm very grateful to her for that kind of subtle steering, because it transpired it would be very difficult to do that kind of research. I mean, you know, other people have been able to do research in Xinjiang. Well, were doing a bit of research in Xinjiang by the time I was doing my PhD, but it was, you know, very, very challenging. And now, given what's going on, you know, impossible to go back at all, I think. But she suggested, well, you know, you're interested in these kinds of topics. What about Inner Mongolia? And at that stage, I didn't really know anything about Inner Mongolia. But she suggested, yeah, okay, what about, you know, doing a project on the Mongols in Inner Mongolia, looking at these questions of religion. I was going to do research on a group of Muslim Mongols in Western Inner Mongolia. And yeah, this sounded very interesting to me. It sounded like it might be more practically feasible. The Mongolian Inner Asia Studies unit has these contacts particularly in Inner Mongolia with institutions there that are really important when doing research in China in particular. And so I thought this seems practically more viable, while still being something that ticks a lot of the boxes that I'm interested in. But yeah, I mean, I suppose this gets back to your question of how this comes about. I mean, in a sense, there is some original intellectual orientation on the part of the scholar, but that you then get redirected in certain ways according to, you know, the practical exigencies of having to do research. I mean, it's not just the case that you can kind of plonk yourself down anywhere in the world. So yeah, in some sense, it's there's a bit of compromise involved, but I'm very happy that that's what did happen.
Finally, I sat down with Dr. Isa Kaveggia, asking her how she came to Japan as a field site.
That's a very good question. And I think, you know, with every story, there are different ways in which you can tell this story. In my case, I already had a connection with Japan. I grew up in Croatia, and my high school had an exchange program with a high school in Japan. So I visited for 3 months when I was still in high school. And I think I had some familiarity with the context. And I think that's what made me interested in learning more. But then as I refined the question, I was interested in how people think about meaning in life and how they, you know, what they consider to be a good life. And as I was trying to refine the question in relation to a particular field site, I realized it might make sense to think about particular groups of people that are in some ways in transitions in their life, which that might kind of facilitate or kind of encourage them to have a think about why, you know, what constitutes a good life, where they want to be going with it. And at first I thought I would be working with young people who are, you know, in that period of transition towards employment, perhaps towards marriage or deciding whether they want to settle down and how they want to go about it. And older people who are about to retire, have retired, and perhaps that might offer a bit of an opportunity to think about the future. So then having settled on those two groups initially, I realized that that might be a little bit too much. So then I thought, okay, I will work with older people, and the point of retirement seemed to be suitable. I realized that in Japan, most of the literature on aging was based in big cities or in rural areas, mostly in Tokyo, which is the capital. So I was interested in people who lived independently, not in institutions, but not necessarily in Tokyo. So another different big city that is not Tokyo. And that brought me to Osaka, which is the second largest city in Japan. So this kind of circuitous route comes somewhere in between being interested in the region and being interested in a particular set of questions and thinking about where would be nice to spend a year or more. And Osaka certainly is one of those places that it's nice to spend some time there.
From these three stories alone, it can be seen that the process of field site selection involves a unique blend of personal encounter and institutional opportunity, all within the constraints of where was physically and politically accessible. Furthermore, these three researchers all developed personal curiosities towards regions or contexts on their own, which they then brought to their departments. This perhaps speaks to a broader naturalization and therefore exclusion of methodological discussions surrounding field site selection within anthropological education. In the next episode, I will continue this investigation through conversations with three more anthropologists. Thanks again for listening to Origin Stories and to Camthropod.